It really starts with being situationally aware, but also self-aware. You have to know yourself because we all have filters. And that was my journey. I had to know that, man, I had a filter going on in my head in every interaction that I had with people.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another one of our conversations around servant leadership. Today's topic is on being present, and we are joined by Jim Weber, the CEO of Brooks Running. We'll get to an introduction of Jim here shortly, but as a reminder, we're talking about servant leadership at Cellen and what it means and how we can all lean into that. There are five ways of being, and today's way of being we're going to cover is being present. And to me, being present is an interesting one in that it is in some ways such a simple idea, such a simple concept, and yet, at least as I've found it, oftentimes very hard to do consistently. And being present as a leader is really about just that, paying attention, putting other things that might be distractions aside, listening well, listening with the intent to use the information you're gleaning to help people be more impactful and effective in their life, their work life, and their whole life. So as we think about our role as leaders, that's really our job, is to make the folks that we are leading at Cellen as effective and impactful as we can. And that starts with building high trust relationships with the folks on our team. So we know them well enough to know what they need, when they need a nudge, when they need some support. And that a lot of the relationship building and the trust building starts with our job as leaders is to make ourselves available, to be present in that relationship building. And it's really the onus is on us to lead with that. So that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. And again, I'm thrilled that Jim Weber from Brooks Running is willing to join us in the conversation. I've had the good fortune of getting to know Jim over the last number of years. Brooks Running, as many of you know, is a client of Cellen's from a while back and is actually a current client as well, as we help them expand into the Campus Seattle project from their building next door. So we're working together currently, and I've just got a soft spot in my heart for Brooks as a great local Seattle company that's sort of conquering the world in the running space. And I've admired Jim from afar as a really thoughtful and engaging leader who, a little bit like us, is also very focused on purpose. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So Jim, maybe with that rambling introduction, give us a little bit about you and your role at Brooks and what that's looked like today.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Scott, and everyone at Cellen. I've been a fan of your company, your culture, and the high standards and level that I think you carry yourself as a great company in this community. And Brooks has felt always fortunate to have Cellen help us create spaces for our teams and our people. So super happy to be with you today. I love this topic, and it's timeless in a way. But my journey at Brooks began, 23 years ago. I was actually on the board and came off the board as the fourth CEO in 2 years at a troubled time in the company in 2001. And I do feel like, sorry, everyone, I have the best job in Seattle because we have a team here that's really trying to build a brand in the middle of a just super competitive global category. But it's a positive thing in people's lives, and it's fun. It isn't easy, but I just feel really fortunate to be a part of this team and been able to play a leadership role at Brooks these last two decades.
You've obviously seen and led a chapter at Brooks that has been about tremendous growth. And maybe if you could share with us a little bit about what that's been like. And I'm particularly curious about, you referenced the fact that it's a fun but challenging industry, and that growth has been great, but also not without its challenges and some hard parts along the way. Can you share a little bit of the journey, I guess, with us?
Sure. And you know, the short version of it is we've done something pretty unique in the broader athletic footwear apparel industry, and that includes fitness and outdoor as well. Is we really focused on a niche and only running, as opposed to court shoes, athletic shoes, everything else that most of our competitors do. And that focus has been really the key to our success. So the industry is something like $40 billion globally. And there's lots of ways to play. We compete against some of the best brands in all of, you know, the consumer world, starting with Nike. But running is the biggest category of all at over 40 billion. So we're trying to build a premium performance niche in that one slice of the broader athletic and outdoor marketplace. And I think every time we sit down and we work on strategy every year, we almost always come to the conclusion that our real, real advantage long-term is our focus, because we have such an intensity of focus on this customer, this active, you know, running customer, includes walking and hiking and, you know, gym and the like, but running is the core of it. Because we wake up every day solving for that customer, I think that's been the key to our success. And we've seen that as the marketplace has changed, as consumer habits and preferences change, you know, we have to follow, you know, our customer all through that. I'm using even today, Scott, a quote from, it was attributed to Thomas Jefferson, but it's basically, in matters of style, swim with the current, but in matters of principle, stand like a rock. And this focus on the customer, the runner, has really allowed us to make, I think, smarter decisions more effectively and efficiently. And that's been over 20 years, that focus has just been such a key to our success in building a brand. We'll do about 1.3 billion just under this year. And when we started, we had a $60 million business that we had to shrink to focus only on performance run to about 45 million. So I think that's about 12, 15% compound over 23 years now. And we feel like we're just getting started. But I think that focus on what we do well and the customer that we're really tuned into has been the key to our success.
That's cool. And in terms of the hard parts along the way, maintaining that focus when I'm sure there's no shortage of opportunities to zig or zag, but that's got to be part of it. But as you think about the challenges of being a CEO in today's environment, what do those include for you guys?
Well, you just alluded to one is not to chase shiny things. And, you know, when your markets stall, and COVID was one of those situations for all of us, right? When the market stalls, whether it's a disruption on a virus, supply chain, or even just a shift in consumer, you know, that focus really has us rolling up our sleeves and resolving for this customer that isn't going away. So instead of chasing shiny things, we've come out the other side of these challenging times far stronger. And that's when the step functions, I think, in our market share and what we stood for as a brand in the eyes of the customer has really happened. So, you know, I think that's what, through thick and thin, and we're all going to go through challenging times, right? I mean, I think one of the things we don't do is play this classic portfolio strategy of we're doing three or four things in a portfolio sense. So if this one's down, maybe these two will be up. You know, we're all in on run. And so it forces us in a good way to solve for the long term.
As you know, we talk about purpose a lot at Celent, and you are among the leaders that I've run across over the last number of years that is as focused on purpose yourself as anybody I've met. And so, I'm intrigued to explore that a little bit with you. And I listened to your South by Southwest presentation you did a year or so ago. That touched on that. I know you've written a book called Running with Purpose. So share with us sort of what that, how you ended up as focused as you are as a leader on purpose, both in your personal life and in your work life. What does that look like?
Well, we can start with the business side. We were in the conference rooms in 2001, 2002. What are we going to be at Brooks? And we knew we were going to focus on run, but how do we talk about that? The leader in performance running, a mission and a vision around that. And we kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And we basically landed on to inspire everyone to run their path, because running can be transformational and it feeds you. It's an investment in yourself. It's not just a sport for personal achievement. It's really an investment in your health and wellness and mental clarity. We knew that, I think, before the world in our industry had moved there. And when we kept looking at those words to inspire everyone to run their path, it felt bigger than a mission. You know, when you think about a mission sort of an inside thing, and it's a series maybe of campaigns. Often they're financial goals, they're business milestones, and they rally the team, and they're important. We have a mission, but this, you know, was a little bit different than that. And then a vision also was kind of an internal conversation where it's an aspiration for what you as a team, your organization, your company can become. And when we started to look at this purpose, I loved it for a couple of reasons. One, it was focused on our customer. And therefore, you never sort of get there. And the word inspire was sort of key to that, is we're never going to get to the finish line on that purpose. It's evergreen and it's timeless. And it's always a North Star for us that we have to, you know, resolve for at times. But I think that's why we have a vision and we have a mission, and those are important, but they're sort of underneath this purpose, which, you know, for us, you know, likely will never change. And unless we actually, you know, have global domination and some other CEO, Scott, has to come in and add something to our mix. But I think that's how we saw purpose. It was the only thing that I felt comfortable in literally putting on the wall in our reception area, because I knew it wouldn't change. It's our vector, our North Star, and everything else comes underneath that. That we're building our company, we have ambition, which is our mission. We absolutely have vision for what we can become to our customer and in this industry. That's sort of a 10-year thing, but purpose extends beyond that. And I think when I took this job at Brooks, it's part of my own personal journey, but I put on my wall, on my whiteboard, it's still here today, a Benjamin Disraeli quote that the secret to success is constancy of purpose. And that, I just found that to be true in my life. I never thought that I was that multi-talented that I could try three or four things and be successful at it. I really wanted to be successful, and I felt like that focus was critical. So I believe that for myself. I've really tried to become an effective leader in the roles that I've had. So secret to success is constancy of purpose. I think it's been true for our brand too, because we were out-resourced, outsized, out, you know, every, you know, most of our competitors are larger than we are today. You know, New Balance and ASICS are both 4 or 5 billion. We are more focused. We're bigger in run. But because of that, you know, that again, we think that focus on purpose as our North Star has just been a key part of our success.
I think the other piece of it, which is common, I think, in the most impactful purpose statements, is it is very other-centered, right? You, to your point, you're talking about your client, the passionate runner or walker or hiker that needs good shoes to do it well. And sort of you understand what it is that you're providing them in their life. And our purpose at Celan is to improve the lives of those around us as builders, partners, and neighbors. And it was developed through conversations with over 140 people around the company in a wide variety of roles. And it came really born out of the storytelling that people were willing to share about their best day ever at Celan, and the things that they loved about Celan and the reasons they got up in the morning. And it was never about themselves. It was never just about the company. It was really around the people we serve and the people we partner with in the work that we do. And that was so inspiring. And so, like you, we have put it on the wall, and we don't just put it on the wall. We really actually refer to it as an executive team regularly to make sure that the decisions we're making and the choices we're making are aligned with that purpose. And I think it served us really well. But
no, that's great. I love it. And you said it, Scott, it is focused on others, and you never get there, right? There's no finish line, as they say. It's something that challenges you every day. And it's really meaningful to team members, I think. That's awesome.
How do you think about the opportunity and the challenge of being present as a leader? And what has your experience been leaning into that work?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you chose that one to discuss with me today, because I have quite a story of it, in the sense that I wasn't even aware of what that meant until probably I was 40 years old. I thought being a leader was seeing the puzzle that you had to solve in the business and the strategy of creating plans and programs, of leading those and engaging everyone on it. But I just didn't have a lot of presence for people in the moment. I was so in my head. And we were at a strategy offsite, I'll never forget it, with a consultant. And he said, great, you guys have spent 2 days on vision, on strategy. It's really compelling. Now you got to spend a third day, and it's all going to be on people. It's all going to be on the organization, the people you need to execute this. And we had come out of a small business at 100 or 200 million, and it stopped me cold, because I knew he was right. I mean, it was all about people now. We had to execute as a team and through people. So since the that meeting, I think what I've learned is a few things. One is it really starts with being situationally aware, but also self-aware. You have to know yourself because we all have filters. And that was my journey. I had to know that, man, I had a filter going on in my head in every interaction that I had with people. So setting that aside and being present meant deeply listening to them for exactly, you know, the context that they were living in and what this conversation was about in the context that they were seeing. So that self-awareness and situational awareness, gosh, Scott, I just think that's so foundational to being an effective leader of people and so foundational to be in a presence, to be present in a one-on-one conversation. So for me, wow, that was a huge wake-up call. And I think since that time, I've become a much more effective, you know, leader and frankly, a coach for people because I'm not in my head. I'm setting that aside and having this conversation of, you know, you hear about deeply listening and active listening and all of that. To me, it reflects the fact that you're curious, you don't know everything, and being present in this moment means you're aware of that so that you are literally, you know, fully engaged in understanding what they're communicating. So for me, it's been quite a journey, but I would say 15 years ago, I wasn't wired into that in the moment. And obviously that's where you need to be for people.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's interesting too, because there are two of the other ways of being you sort of referenced. One is about being authentic, right? Really knowing yourself to understand, you know, who you are as you show up in that moment. The other one is around being accepting. And that is around, you know, accepting folks for who they are and where they have come from and what their opinions and values are and not filtering, you know, not applying those filters that you might have and really listening in a way that allows you to do what you can to help that person move forward. So it sort of leverages a few different ways to think about the work here in servant leadership. But was there anybody that, you know, it sounds like you had an epiphany of sorts at the offsite, but is there anybody along the way that's been a particularly impactful mentor or coach or example for you of being present or what it looks like?
First of all, my wife of some 40 years is just a rock as a human being. She's just very centered and just has a very strong sense of who she is and a connection with others and in every sense. So, you know, having a partner like that at home has fed me a lot. And once I understood, you know, and wanting to be more actively present for others, she's been a great example for me. But I think always the best leaders that I've been around, and oftentimes they haven't actively coached me, but I've told them that they've been coaching me because I've just watched how they make decisions, how they interact with people, how they present at meetings and what their executive leadership and managerial presence is in one-to-one or in a team of people. I've just paid attention to that. And so some of those leaders early on at Pillsbury was Jerry Levin. Warren Buffett is amazing in the category of life is not fair. His brain is amazing, of course, from an investment and business point of view. But he's very present when you're talking to him. The first meeting I had with Warren went for almost 3 hours. The door was shut. There wasn't one phone call. There wasn't a cell phone on the table. And he was completely present for me and wanted to learn as much as he could about Brooks and what we were building there in the early days. So, you know, I think all of that just reflected the fact that, you know, people weren't, I think most of us experience when you're having a conversation with someone that is only like halfway there. That was me 15 years ago versus yeah, really, you know, fully in the conversation and connecting you with where you are. So yeah, I've observed that once I became aware of it. And some people are only half there and you know it when you see it. Yeah. And others are fully present. So, you know, I think again, being aware of it was the key to identifying it for me.
Yeah, what an incredible opportunity and experience to spend some time around Warren Buffett. For those of you at Celent who don't know, Brooks Running is owned by Berkshire Hathaway. So Warren Buffett, the the sage from Omaha is Jim's boss, I suppose, at some level. But what a cool opportunity to have a coach and mentor and friend like that. So that's neat. You talked a little bit about you can tell when somebody's half there or all the way there. And when you find yourself not all the way there, do you have any words of advice or, you know, ways that you get sort of back to being fully present if you find yourself drifting or wandering a bit?
You know, I think what I catch myself on is, for me, it's always been about preparation. You know, if it's not in my calendar in my life, it doesn't exist. So, you know, I try to get organized by having everything in my calendar and looking ahead. I'm trying to make sure I'm prepared for the meeting that's coming up. Either it's a one-on-one with one of our teammates, or a meeting. And you know, I think now one of the things we have in our training programs, we talk about a lot of things as it relates to giving feedback and taking feedback. And you have to recognize the power differential, right? If you are at a higher level than the employee teammate you're talking to, you just have to recognize the power level and literally get vulnerable in an uneven level so you can have an open conversation and use language that is really safe and allowing them to really share what they need to express. So for me, you know, looking ahead at the conversations and the meetings I'm coming into, I try to get myself in the right frame and what my role is in that meeting. Sometimes it's a decision meeting and I've got to go from a learning mode to a decision mode because that's going to be my role in that meeting. But oftentimes it's part of a problem solving mode or a connection opportunity with an employee or with a team. And that's the mode I want to play. So the point I'm making on all of that is it's prep. You know, if I go from meeting to meeting to meeting, I try to center myself on, you know, what mode do I need to be in this next session that I have to be effective for the people there? Yeah. So I think that's it. And as many of us are so busy, you know, you play different roles with different teams and different meetings. So for me, that's really important. Otherwise, what am I doing? I'm coming in with my own reality. And it's going to be the filter that I now, you know, interact and connect with whoever I'm meeting with. So, you know, I've always believed it in almost everything I do. If I can prepare, I'm going to be more successful. And that includes being present in a one-on-one meeting or with a team.
I love that also that you've already referenced three of the other four ways of being when you mentioned vulnerability. It's really true. And I think about, you talked about, you know, try to create some parity in the conversation you're in, depending on who you're with and understanding the power imbalance or dynamic that's at play. And, you know, it's really, I think, incumbent on all of us as leaders to be aware of that and for us to lead the way with vulnerability, not to expect the person to come with their own. It, you know, as leaders, we're the ones that need to lead with authenticity and vulnerability and acceptance. And it puts a big onus on the leader to show up in those ways. And people often think of servant leadership as being sort of soft and squishy and, you know, a lot of pats on the backs, but it's not. It's, first of all, it's personally very challenging work because the onus of investing in the relationship and building trust with the people you are leading starts with you. So you can't rely on others. It's up to you. And it also requires you to bring challenge and push back and, you know, really to help folks sort of get to the next level who might not otherwise get there on their own. So it's this balance that you need to bring in the relationship building and leadership that's really important. So you're hitting the hot buttons, man. You're the best.
And, well, I just want to reinforce that point you're making, because early on it was, you know, humble leadership, servant leadership, being vulnerable, and those are attributes. But what's really at the core of that, you know, people also want leaders to be strong, and they want leaders to be worth following, and they want leaders they respect. For me, the most powerful words around that, and it does lead to all being present, are knowing that you don't know everything. You're not all in your own head with that ego. And you're open-minded and curious to learning something at every turn of the page and every meeting that you have. So that vulnerability really is curiosity and coming in that you don't know everything. It's not that you're necessarily humble and vulnerable. It's that you are open-minded to learning something. And I think that's, you know, that's something I carry as well. I think it's super positive.
We've talked a lot about being present in our work lives, but can you share anything about how it's impacted your personal life?
My wife and I have three young men now, boys in their 30s, and we're still parenting, right? In that supportive coaching, you know, way. And that's been really cool. That means being present because they're completely different people than I am or my wife is. So, you know, that's been really cool and fun for me because it wasn't something I had personally experienced. Plus, we have three grandchildren now from 3 to 10 years old. And there's nothing that is a greater distraction from, you know, all the challenges you face in a given day and in the world, frankly, than spending time with young children. It's absolutely pure joy. And talk about being present, you don't have a choice. Because their energy is obviously going to control most of the environment when you spend time there in a great way.
For me, there, you mentioned how what a rock your wife was, and you know, Sean, my wife, is the same and such an important part of my life. And I've found that, you know, there's no more valuable investment of my energy than being present in our relationship, and especially in the midst of all the things that any of us have to do on any given day. And we, you know, we spend ourselves, our days very engaged in work and all that entails, but to be able to disconnect from that when we're together and to be present for our relationship and the importance that that holds in our lives and my life and how that contributes ultimately to my success in everything else is sort of the root of so much of it. So it's a great reminder that our partners and spouses are just incredibly valuable partners in this work and in our lives. And you can never, never forget that.
Yeah, and I would add the other tool that I've had over the years, now we're talking about mindfulness and meditation and the like. My meditation was running. It really was, you know, that was my processing time. I almost always ran alone. You know, I wasn't timing myself. I sometimes music, but oftentimes not. And it was just processing time. It was truly meditation for me. So the point is I think you have to recharge, right? You personally have to recharge. If you're not healthy, how can you, you know, be a positive force for your family or your team? So I do think, you know, for me, it was physical fitness. It was just moving and running was my tool there. So you can't not acknowledge that. I think to stay healthy, you have to make sure you're giving yourself the time to recharge as well.
Well, thank you, Jim. Maybe it's sort of a wrap-up question, unless you have other things, but there are a lot of current and future leaders at Cellen who are hopefully watching our conversation here today. And what advice would you have for somebody who's maybe had the same sort of leadership passions that you did as a young person or might benefit from your own journey in leadership? What advice or guidance or coaching would you have for others at Cellen?
Yeah, I think it's something I've learned, but it's something I often say to newly minted leaders too, you know, especially at a more senior level director or vice president, is that, you know, you don't have to know all the answers, but I think your team would expect you to know the questions. And so, you know, especially for new leaders coming in, you know, I don't think the job of being a team leader in a business has ever been harder. I think with everything that's happening in the world now, fast things are changing. These are hard jobs. And therefore, it's good if you enjoy it and it's a craft and skill set you want to develop. But for me, you know, I think being present with the question is more important than having to know the answers. And your team will actually respect that. But you hold the questions as you go through conversations. I often early in my career, I felt, oh, my gosh, I got to make a decision. They're all looking at me. You know, I'm in the fishbowl. They're wanting me to make a decision. And the truth was, you know, what they do want is to make sure that the right questions are being focused on, and maybe even they're engaged in those. So anyway, that's what my advice would be, is you don't have to know the answers, but it is good to know all the right questions.
Yeah, early on, one of my mentors described to me what he considered the four most important words in leadership, which are, what do you think? In other words, as you're in those conversations, making sure that you've got the awareness and humility to ask others what they think. People want to be heard. To your point, we're all still learning. Nobody has all the answers. And one of the traits of leadership is really around engaging others and bringing out their best by giving them the opportunity to participate and to provide input and their good thinking. So it's I've remembered that in my little career along the way here. Well, thank you, Jim. I really, again, can't thank you enough for joining us in these conversations around servant leadership at Cellen. Thank you for the opportunity to work with Brooks. Thank you for the opportunity to get to know each other a bit over the years, and just have remained a huge fan, and proud to be your friend. And thank you again for being part of this series with us.
No, it's been fun. Thanks for having me, and all the best for a fantastic fall and on into the future.